Chapter 30.
Sailing galley! Elysian canvas! Leonis said.
Gavin thought it was horrible news, but the slaves murmured like it was a good thing.
What's that mean?
He asked.
Elysian canvas, means Elysian ship, most like. Fuck! Fuck!
Fuckalot said. Don't the Elysians have the best cannons? Gavin asked.
Don't matter,
Bugs said across the aisle from Gavin. The man had some sort of condition, made his eyes bulge. It was hard to look at him, even in shades of grey.
Treat their slaves worse than they treat their dogs. Starve them, beat them so bad they can't barely row. Elysian galley can't run as fast, can't turn as fast as we can, not by a long sight.
It made sense, Gavin supposed. Elysians captured more slaves than anyone, refused to be bound by the laws on the taking of slaves that Chromeria imposed on the other six satrapies. If slaves were cheap, there was no need to take special care of them. The dead could be easily replaced. Elysians were real bastards. Gunner was Elysian. Gavin had found the man amusing, before he was under his power. Thought it was funny to play with Gunner's mind by stoppering the man's musket rather than killing him back when he sank his ship near Garriston. If he'd killed him, he wouldn't be here now. Funny how the mind can wander even when rowing. Gavin's frequently bloodied hands were wrapped now in cotton. He had a new empathy for Kip, who'd burned his left hand falling into a fire before the Battle of Garriston. His hands were agony every day. He'd thought he had a man's hands before, rough and calloused. He'd given himself too much credit.
Win or die, Leonis shouted.
The slaves didn't shout the response. They hated Leonis.
You worthless shit sacks! You shout back, or I'll kill all every last one of you! Boy!
He shouted to the young man who had taken his old job as foreman's second.
Whip that line, now!
The boy hesitated.
Now!
The boy lashed the whip across the bare backs of one of the lower rows. They cried out in pain. More than necessary, Gavin thought, but the boy hadn't hit them as hard as Leonis liked.
Win or die,
Leonis shouted.
Row to hell,
the slaves replied.
Never slack,
row to hell.
Scratch the back of Shadow Jack,
Leonis shouted.
Row to hell.
Row right back, he shouted.
The drums began pounding out their tempo, and Leonis disappeared to the next slave deck.
Don't think I'm going to make it through this one,
Nine said.
You never think you're going to make it through, Itchy. This time's different, I can feel it.
As before, with scores of men sweating in the tight confines of the rowing deck, it got hot fast. It was a bright, calm day outside, which meant this would be a clean, simple race to the death. The drums pounded their steady tempo, and Gavin rowed. And rowed, and rowed. 20 minutes. The boy went around and gave them water. At least he didn't smash their lips with a long-handled cup. Not on purpose, anyway. 30 minutes. Finally, Leonis poked his ugly head below decks.
Drums! Corso!
The drums picked up, and Gavin settled into the new tempo happily. Happily? How strange was that? There was something oddly freeing about having no decisions to make. Go when they say go. Stop when they say stop. Eat when they say eat. Avoid the lash. Take your double serving of strong wine. What am I going to do if I get free anyway, Caris? I can't draft anymore. Will you still love me when you find out I'm not what I was? He could imagine the looks in people's eyes, the pity. He had been respected, loved, and feared in every corner of the seven satrapies. But the foundation of his power had always been his drafting. He'd been so much better than everyone else, so effortlessly good that he'd become nothing else. He wasn't a man. He was a drafter. You couldn't think about Gavin without knowing he was the prism, that he was drafting, that he was the best. The best now, probably the best in hundreds of years. Without that, he was... what? An arrogant figurehead who ritually murdered scores of drafters every year. A hothead who threw young women off his balcony when they displeased him, and got away with it. Other drafters made the transition from magical power to political power with no problem. The White had done it gracefully, his father less so. But Gavin, it wasn't in him. And it was one thing to stop drafting because you believed you still had service to give. It was quite another not to be able to. A man might take an oath of celibacy and be respected. A man castrated was at best pitied. And there was no hiding the loss. By this Sunday it would be over, for good or ill. He would either draft while performing the Sunday rituals or fail to do so, or if he didn't make it back to the Chromeria by then, someone else would be named Prism. It was that simple. How far away was that now? 4 months? Caris, my life will be over in 4 months, no matter what. I'm so sorry. I wasted so much time. I wanted us to have a life. I wanted us to have children, to see you holding new life in your hands, to be whole with you. Gavin suddenly wanted to vomit, and it wasn't from the exertion. The drummer sped the tempo again, and Gavin didn't care. And again, the last sprint, but his mind was still, impenetrable, the actions all at a long remove. Then a shouted order, and the slaves stowed their oars with unhurried precision. With a crash, Gavin was thrown out of his reverie. Wood screaming on wood, oars snapping like kindling, men shouting in pain and fear and rage. Muskets rattling, a cannon booming, the stench of black powder and fear. Men thrown off their benches. Gavin found himself staring at a gap-toothed sailor in the other ship. The man was standing up, having been thrown down by the collision. He had a slow match in hand and was right behind a charged cannon. Gavin flung out a hand, willing a spike of blue to fly into the man's eyes. Nothing. The man looked at him quizzically, then an awe cracked his face. He dropped, but someone else grabbed the slow match. The ships continued their slide past each other, and the cannon boomed. Wood exploded, tearing the steps off and filling the slave's deck with burning, hot, blinding smoke. The Bitter Cob's cabin boy staggered past Gavin's bench in the smoke, twisted metal protruding from his back. Another cannon boomed, tearing a hole upward, letting dazzling sunlight in, illuminating the roiling black smoke. The very air seemed on fire. All the slaves were coughing, lying down, abandoning their task of stabbing their counterparts with the oars. Gavin heard the clatter of the grappling hooks at the end of the boarding nets as they were thrown across the now widening gap between the ships. Pirates were shouting, and the distinctive crack of Captain Gunner's musket sounded with a frequency that shouldn't have been possible. Shouted orders, and the clatter of feet across the decks over their heads, and the pirates boarded the other ship. Then abruptly, the Bitter Cob was quiet. The wind blowing through the oar holes and the two big holes from cannon fire began dispersing the smoke. The slaves began sitting up, assessing the damage, even as screams for mercy and shouts of rage sounded from the other ship just paces away. The cabin boy was dead, or unconscious and on his way to dead, lying in the center aisle. A young kid, and not possessed of good looks or virtue, but not deserving this, regardless. The stairs up to the second deck were half torn off. Half a row of slaves had been pulverized. Blood slicked the deck in the back rows. Before Gavin could even complete an inventory, someone swung down from the boarding nets and dropped in through the hole the cannon had blasted. He clambered for a bit, almost losing his balance. Any of the slaves nearby could have knocked him into the sea, but they were all frozen with surprise. The man was light-skinned, blonde, dressed richly. Gavin didn't recognize him immediately as one of the crew. Worse, it didn't look like any of the other slaves did, either. He wasn't one of the Bitter Cob's sailors, and he had a sword.
"I'm not going to hurt you," he said. "If you row for me, I'll free you."
He let that sink in for a second, then said,
"I'll free you now if you'll help me throw off the boarding nets. But quick!"
With his voice, Gavin placed him immediately. The young man could only be Antonius Malargos, the cousin of Tisus Malargos, who had become the Green, briefly, before Gavin had deposed her, and a nephew of Dervani Malargos, who had become a god, briefly, before Gavin had killed him.
"Who's with me?"
Antonius asked. A slave raised his manacled hand, and Antonius's pale skin lit with red luxin. He filled the lock with red luxin and then set it alight, burning it out. It burned the slave's wrist, too, but he was free.
"Quickly! We have only moments," Antonius said. "Most of the pirates are on the other ship. We killed a few men still here, cut the boarding nets and push off. I'll free you all. I swear it on Orholm's name."
It was a decent plan, if a desperate one. The other galley didn't have any oars on one side. If Antonius could seize the Bitter Cob and throw off the boarding nets, he'd have a good chance. If he made it 10 paces, he'd probably make it back to port. And as a Malargos, he had no reason to make sure Gavin made it home alive. In his place, Gavin didn't think he'd bring Antonius home. His family's mortal enemy, delivered into his hand. Gavin's heart despaired. He saw Leonis had fallen between two slaves' benches. The man had struggled to his hands and knees. He was bleeding a stream from his scalp. Looked worse than it was. Scalp wounds bleed heavily, but he did look woozy. Should Gavin warn Antonius? A slave behind Gavin raised manacled hands. Antonius sighed with relief that another slave was taking his offer. He began walking back toward him. His eyes fell on Gavin, then moved on. No recognition. The prism was dead. This bearded creature in rags and filth was nothing. Gavin felt sudden hope that he might live, and a sense of the most profound divorce from himself he'd ever known. Antonius had seen Gavin in person before, and seen his face reproduced in 1,000 paintings, etchings, and mosaics, and he didn't see him. He saw a slave. Gavin had thought himself inseparable from his power, from his title, from his position. He wasn't even inseparable from his own face. Antonius stopped, looked at Gavin again quizzically. His eyes widened. Gavin missed whatever happened on the boy's face next because he was looking at the boy's raised sword. So much revenge for the Malagos family that close. Gavin knew death, and he watched it coming, unblinking. Antonius dropped to his knees.
Your Holiness, you live?
Gavin's eyes snapped back to the boy's. Far from thirsty for vengeance, if anything, Antonius looked on the verge of tears. Tears of worship, adoration, hope. A child, not bound by what his parents hated. An innocent, putting his faith in a man he'd never met.
Your Holiness, let's get these chains off you.
How long had it been since Gavin had seen such goodness? How long since he'd felt it himself? Too long. And now it was too late. Gavin saw the movement. Leonis lurched to his feet behind Antonius. Gavin's hand shot out to stop him, and he was jerked short as he reached the end of his chain, the manacle biting into his wrist, bloodying it. Worse, stopping it. But all Gavin saw was Leonis crashing into Antonius's back, blade first. He tackled the young man into Gavin, stabbing repeatedly. Gavin was carried off the back of his bench by their momentum, the bench cutting his knees out from under him. The oar overhead and his manacles kept him from falling all the way to the ground, as his oar mates first were caught unprepared and then tried to help drag Gavin out of harm's way. Gavin couldn't move fast enough. He pulled the bandages from his hands, unravelling them as fast as possible, and lashed out with a knee. He missed because he was held too far away, then he kicked out with one bare foot at Leonis. Somehow, he hit the man in the throat. Leonis rolled back on his heels, gasping. It gave Gavin a split second, and he used it to drape his bandages down around Leonis's neck. Once, twice, Gavin wrapped them, and then he yanked. It pulled the man off balance toward him. Instantly abandoning his plan to strangle the man, Gavin hugged Leonis's head against his chest. With his twisted spine, Leonis's neck had grown thick as a bull's with muscle. Gavin whipped his torso left and right, left and right. He couldn't hear any crack of the neck breaking, didn't feel it, so he whipped back and forth until he was certain Leonis wasn't moving. He was a beast, and the rage was all. And he was too late. He released Leonis, unwrapped the bandages, and heaved his foul body into the aisle. He looked at Antonius's body lying between the benches. Lying between the benches, and blinking up at Gavin.
I think I owe my Aunt Irene an apology,
the boy said, very much alive. He spread one of the cut gaps in his tunic, showing a coat of the finest Elysian mesh steel beneath it.
She gave me this for my birthday. I asked for a racehorse. I complained. Fuck,
Fuckalot said, impressed. Antonius jumped to his feet, shaking it off. He began patting his pockets, looking for something.
My spectacles! My red spectacles! Where are they? I can't burn open your manacles without them.
The slaves began looking around furiously. Suddenly, freedom was this close. And with Leonis dead, it suddenly seemed real.
Ah!
Someone cried out. He lifted a mangled frame. and the red lenses shattered to dust and tiny bits nowhere near big enough to draft through. There was blood on the deck. Could it be enough? No, there wasn't enough light. To Gavin's eyes, it was a black pool. Then Orholm stood. He lifted a hand. He held the manacle key.